This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you?
What? Give me some good news, damn it.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Was that Thanos, Steven? Or Guru?
I don't know what I did.
All right, Pasta. Hey, don't worry. You're back there holding us down.
That was the Mac Jones thing from the other day that we never got rid of.
A Mac Jones, what, a Mac Jones mashup? You put something together for McCorkle?
Yeah, do you want to hear it?
Yeah,
Sam Lubin did.
Okay.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you?
Mac Jones!
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you. This is a Warriors show. I just kind of was curious of what that soundbite was. By the way, it sounded like he said Mike Jones. Not really Mac Jones. I don't know if that was the goal there, Steven, but...
He very well might have said Mike Jones.
I don't know who that Jones.
Is, we should get Mike Jones on the show.
Yeah. Let me know if you can get a hold of him. No. He certainly had his heyday. Warriors in the middle of their heyday. Middle of a nice run. 13-2 over the last 15 games. And yes, thank you from our YouTube chat, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. I am going to try and get a sponsor from Big Face Coffee. Now, knowing Jimmy Butler, as little as I do, my guess is that I would have to pay him to become sponsored by Big Face Coffee. I love coffee. I am wired right now off of coffee. Pete's is my preference. You know, the Dickinson bland. Love the French roast, dark particular, the medium and the light, mainly the light ones, Pasta. It keeps going up in terms of caffeine, the lighter you get.
So are you a big Phil's guy?
Not really. See, I'm not a snob, but I only drink black coffee. So Phil's is good, but I feel like a lot of their drinks are very, drawn up. You know, it's like, I don't want to say they're quite Dutch bros or Dutch brothers, but all of those drinks, if you're going there, it's because you're looking for a different variety, a different flavor. You know, just give me the coffee. Give me the caffeine, a little bit, of, like a hint of French, and I don't know, maybe an occasional press.
See, I've never been, I have not hit the coffee stage in my life just yet. But everybody tells me that it's coming.
It will. I mean, the other thing about coffee, too, and one of the reasons why I think Jimmy Butler is a massive coffee drinker is because it does have some metabolism qualities. You know, if you're drinking coffee on an empty stomach, obviously you feel like there's this book out there that talks about how the version of yourself that's caffeinated is a different version that is not, because caffeine is a drug. I mean, it's not a lethal drug, obviously, but you are a different version of yourself. And like when I rolled in here today, Pasta, and had no coffee, I was a very different version of myself. I was not ready to do this show. I was ill prepared. I didn't have the energy. I didn't have the wherewithal. I didn't have the presence of mind like the Golden State Warriors do on the court, it seems, every time they take it. And you will get there one day, Pasta. I promise you that. All right, from the 707 on the text line, what Draymond does to the defense for everyone else, Jimmy does that for the offense and defense. Yeah, I think that what I've really liked about watching those two play together, and while I was, let me backtrack, I was skeptical a little bit that Butler was going to work as well as it had. Like, I didn't think they were going to go 13-2. I thought he'd make him a better basketball team, but I was a little worried, you know, just because he hadn't played much basketball this year. 35 years old. How much does he have left in the tank? But the one thing that I was not worried about was how he was going to work with Draymond Green off the court. That was not something that concerned me in the slightest. And the reason is, as much as Draymond can be difficult to deal with, as much as Jimmy Butler, to be honest, from what we've read, and he has a track record of it, can be difficult to deal with, those two players have respect for dogs. And what I mean by that is Jimmy Butler has never had an issue with a teammate that he felt like was a hard worker, was someone that could help them win, and that he could challenge. I think it's been the same with Draymond. His biggest issue has been with players that he feels like have had a foot out or that haven't been all in or bought in on the team. And Draymond's done some things that I do not agree with. But the point is, I think those two personalities are very similar. They have respect for competitors, and they have respect for players that are there to do one thing, and that's win, that are committed to the team and that are there to help them win as much as possible. So from that standpoint, I don't really think that Draymond and Jimmy was a concern of mine off the floor. As much as their personalities are, you know, reportedly explosive, those two working together was never going to be an issue for me. All right, from the 707, although KD was lethal with the Warriors, that was more of an ISO team. Jimmy makes them even more lethal overall defensively and offensively. He's way more effective for this team. And then ball than KD so far. Oh, they've balled more than KD has. I'm assuming the 707 is talking about the Phoenix Suns, who have really struggled as of late, and are actually on the outside looking in of even the play-in. They are 1.5 games back of the 10 seed in the Dallas Mavericks, although they did get a win their last time out. The thing about Kevin Durant versus Jimmy Butler, I've discussed how I think that this trade for Jimmy Butler has the potential, depending on how far the Warriors go in the postseason, to be remembered as one of the greatest midseason trades in NBA history, considering where the Warriors were, considering where they have a chance to go. I also think that, in regards to the MVP conversation, Nikola Jokic is the best player, SGA is my MVP. With the Warriors, Curry's the best player, Jimmy Butler's my MVP. Kevin Durant versus Butler. That's why I think, I believe that the Warriors would have been better if they traded for KD. I think they would have certainly won some games. Who knows? Maybe they would even be at the sixth seed right now. I do not believe that their ceiling would be as high as it is right now with Jimmy Butler at this stage in his career. Because I'm not talking about prime KD when they got him in 2016. That's an entirely different beast. But at age 36, Kevin Durant, to me, he's still an awesome scorer. Kevin Durant is one of the greatest players in the history of basketball. He's arguably one of the most gifted scorers in the history of basketball. And what he continues to do at this age is quite remarkable. He is averaging, in 37 minutes, mind you, 27 points per game on 42% shooting, 41 from three-point range. Like, he's having an awesome season. And so there's no doubt in my mind that he would have made the Warriors better. He would have helped their scoring, and to the 707's point, would have turned them into a little more of an ISO team, which is what the Phoenix Suns, quite frankly, are. They're just an ISO group, and they give the ball to Beal or Booker or KD or whoever and just let them go to work. But I don't think that they would be as good defensively, and I don't think that we would have seen the kind of residual impact from Butler on the rest of the players right now on the Warriors. I'm talking about the Moses Moody's. I'm talking about now that we're getting to see Jonathan Kuminga, who's a big part of this as well. You know, if you just look at the Warriors' impact statistically, I want to bring this up because the Warriors have compiled during their game notes a before and after of Butler that I think is really interesting. And if we're looking at the Warriors, I do think that we have to discuss, all right, well, what would they have been with Kevin Durant, and what would they have been with, or what have they been with Jimmy Butler? You know, to me, looking at this here, let me pull this up real fast, what they have been with Butler is a top three offense. That's something that, I don't know, perhaps KD could have impacted. They have been number one in assists per game. I think that also is a big reason that they're a top three group in terms of offensive rating. That's a stat that with Kevin Durant, and I know that he's played in the system before, I know he's a willing passer, but I think at this stage in his career, as more of just a pure scorer, I do not think the Warriors would be number one in assists per game right now. Over the last 15, again, I don't think they would be number one in steals per game. While KD is still a capable defender, I don't think that, again, his impact on that end of the floor is as great as his impact on the offensive side. They might be number one in free throw percentage. They might be tied for third in terms of free throws attempted per game, which is where they're currently at over the last 15. They were 27th and 30th, respectively, in those stats before. I do not think the Warriors, again, to take it to the defensive side, would be number one in points off of turnovers per game. And that's where I can honestly say that while Kevin Durant is going to go down in history as a better player than Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler was the better fit for Golden State at the deadline. And I don't know. And I don't know if we'll ever find out if that trade was, again, by design, if it was something that the Warriors had planned all along, if it just was simply luck. Like, I actually think, because remember, the whole reason why the Warriors ended up with Jimmy Butler in the first place is, number one, because KD nixed a trade. They had one set up that was going to send Kuminga to Phoenix. Wiggins was going out too. It would have been KD, Draymond, and Steph from all reports. KD said no. The other trade that did not go through that made this entire thing possible for the Warriors is the fact that Bradley Beal would not relinquish his no trade clause. If Bradley Beal had been willing to go to, I don't know, Milwaukee or perhaps Chicago, maybe even Miami. I mean, I don't think they would have taken him. The point is, if Bradley Beal had said, yeah, I'm cool, get me out of here, I'll hold the no trade clause, Jimmy Butler would be a Phoenix Sun. And I do think that he would absolutely help the Suns. I'm not sure if it would be to the extent that he's helped, say, Golden State, because I don't think that Phoenix plays a lick of defense. The Warriors, while they were offensively challenged before the trade deadline, there was still a borderline top 10 defense. Like, that was a team with potential on that end of the floor. They just weren't elite to the point where they were able to win games more often than not with just their defense. So Jimmy Butler is able to impact both ends of the floor. I think he helps elevate, obviously, their defense, and clearly their offense is moving to a different stratosphere. But again, with Kevin Durant, I think that offensively they could still be an extremely efficient team, but defensively, I just don't see it. I don't see how Kevin Durant has the impact on that end of the floor at his age and with his mind to simply just be a scorer at an elite level, mind you, than Jimmy Butler has for the Golden State Warriors. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings flying solo here on Warriors this week. Got my man Steven Rizzotto behind the glass with me. We're taking your calls up until 10:30 when we're going to replay Steph Curry from Steiny and Guru earlier this week. We got Sam Gordon from the San Francisco Chronicle coming up at 11 o'clock to talk everything Dubs. He covers them. He's the beat writer for the Warriors for the Chronicle. And then Steven has a game that he wants to play at 11:30 that I'm very much looking forward to and know nothing about. In the meantime, Robin is in San Francisco. Robin, good morning. Good to hear from you. How you doing?
I'm doing better, sweetheart. I had some health issues, and so I haven't been in my car to always constantly nag you guys. Thank you for asking. I wanted to point out something you may or may not agree with that 707 said about the Warriors being an outfield team when Kevin Durant was there. Well, here's the deal. They needed somebody that could play ISO ball, because during that time they were at, I forgot the number, but they were way down at the bottom in an isolation ball, okay? Yeah. And when motion ball wasn't working, they had nobody. So they needed an ISO player, and they would hand the ball to Kevin Durant. That was the unselfishness of them. Curry would unleash the ball. Clay would unleash the ball and say, go do your thing, partner. And nine times out of ten, Kevin Durant did. And this is why I say the fans didn't ever really appreciate him. Oh, we're playing ISO ball. Well, the motion ball's not working. And then in some degree, a Butler can isolate. If you look at the Warriors, the type of style of offense they play, they are not good at isolation ball, okay? Mm-hmm. So they need an iso play. And that's all I have to say. Thank you and have a blessed day, sweetheart.
You too, Robin. I'm glad you're feeling better. Please call in anytime. Lots of love sending your way. Yeah, I think you're spot on. Yeah, the Warriors absolutely needed an iso player, and that, I think, was the difference between them winning and losing the 2016 NBA Finals. You know, you could make it about Draymond getting suspended or whatnot, but if you're just talking hoop, like, they needed a bucket getter. They didn't score, I think, the last, was it 4 minutes of Game 7 of the NBA Finals? And again, Draymond Green was their leading scorer, and he was awesome in that game. But until, what was it, Friday, March 12th, it was on Thursday, 2025, from 2060 to 2025, Draymond Green had not been the leading scorer for the Warriors. So you're right. They needed an ISO player. They just happened to get, they just happened to get the best one in the world, which took him into a completely different realm on the heels of a 73-win season. Rich is out in Daly City, wants to talk about the Jimmy Butler effect. Rich, good morning, my man. What's going on?
Hey, good morning, Evan. I'm a longtime diehard Warrior fan, and I've always been pushing for the homegrown talent and stuff. I was a little hesitant with the Butler signing because of the locking up of the additional extension years, because I thought maybe it would affect our ability to sign Kuminga and add more talent. But, you know, I think in retrospect, the Butler effect has been, we have now in a weird way, a true inside-out game where we don't have a traditional post person, but with him playing down low more, it frees up everyone, where before everyone was just standing, you know, on the wings waiting for someone to throw them the ball. But now we have legitimate threat to get the defenses moving around and then creating holes for everyone else. And I think that's the big effect of Jimmy Butler, plus that he's incentivized the offense now, because everyone's like excited now. And I love the fact that he's unlocking everyone now, including Moody and hopefully JK and some of the other guys. And I think that's the big effect that he's having for us. What do you think?
I think you're on the money, Rich. I mean, clearly he has elevated the play of everyone else around him. You know, your point is well taken, and to kind of piggyback on off of what you said and went along with Robin, and thank you for the call, Rich. It's, you know, the biggest thing, Stephen, that I'm waiting for, because you mentioned this earlier, like the Jimmy Butler game. For example, what do you think the Jimmy Butler game looks like? Is it stats? Is it I don't know, does it have to be in the playoffs? Like, what does the Jimmy Butler game look like to you?
I think it's just, you know, 40 plus points. You know, he goes off. I think there are Jimmy Butler games, but in different ways than we might think, that aren't points related. And it's just the invisible factor that he brings with, you know, getting guys in the right spot on the floor, moving the ball around. Those are the things that I think has made Jimmy Butler such a valuable addition. But what I mean by there hasn't been the Jimmy game, I'm thinking like he just takes over, where instead of Jimmy setting everybody up, everybody's setting Jimmy up. And maybe that's not, you know, the way that this offense is working now with him in the fold, but I think a game like he had, what was it, in the postseason in 2020 with Miami in the bubble, where he...
A 40-point triple-double?
40-point triple-double.
Is that what a Jimmy Butler game looks like?
Maybe that's asking for too much, but honestly, I'm at the point where, like, maybe we don't even need one, because we haven't needed it up until this point, and they're 13-3, so maybe we don't even need one.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, look, Jimmy's averaging 16.8 points on 45.5% shooting since he's gotten here. Hasn't also been able to throw a three into the ocean. But everyone else around him, to your point, is playing better. Like, the Warriors right now, in the last 15 games, of which they've won 13, they have seven players that are averaging double digits. And the seventh is a little bit of a cheat, because it's Jonathan Kuminga, who just got 18 in his first game back. So his average is looking pretty good right now. But the point being, they are closer resembling the team that was, strength in numbers to me than, like, the Durant era Warriors, where it was 3 20-point scores. That's where you're getting all your points. Steph, Clay, KD are taking all of the shots. And, you know, you might have a guy contributing off the bench like Sean Livingston or David West or whoever else you want, but those are going to be your three dogs. The Warriors are a lot more balanced. And I think it's because that Butler doesn't have to be a guy who dominates the ball on the offensive side of the floor. Again, he took 5 shots against Sacramento. He had 6 points. You know, he had 6, 7, and 5. Like, it was like a Draymond game, basically. And there were multiple times when I felt like he was at the rim with an opportunity to finish, maybe get fouled, but certainly had an open layup. And instead, he would kick it out to the corner to an open shooter. You know, the very first shot of the game that he took, he got blocked by Valanciunas. And instead of trying to go right into the chest of the big man and maybe get fouled again and get his, basically, he throws it to the corner to a 23-point shooter in Draymond Green. Like, that's the kind of trust that I think he has in his teammates. And at least for the last couple of games, they've been rewarding him, because someone like GP2 apparently can't miss from three. Draymond has had a revival of his three-point shot, at least for now. And I wonder when those numbers start to come back a little bit down to earth. But even the other guys, Moses Moody over his last 15 games is averaging 12.5 points per game on 46, 37, 90 from the free throw line. Buddy Hield in 22 minutes, because again, his role's been moved down a little bit, 11 points per game, shooting 37% from three-point range, and that's exactly what you need from him. Pajemski, before he got hurt, 12.5 points per game. Like, Jimmy Butler is allowing all of these guys that are not prolific scorers, but can be gravy players to Steph, who's been unbelievable. He's averaging near 29 points, even on the heels of an 11-point game against Sacramento. 28.7 points per game over his last 15. Near 50% from the floor, 42 from distance, 93 from the free throw line. So when you have Curry, who can, I don't want to say, you know, he's just become a scorer now, but he's allowed to just do whatever he wants offensively. He's allowed to play with aggression. He can play with a bit more passive, a passive approach on that end of the floor if he needs to. The attention that he draws opens things up a bit more. You know, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the Warriors over the last 2 games have been allowed to shoot the ball at a near 60% clip from three-point range, because while they're, I think, a little bit streaky, and I don't think they're a great three-point shooting team, those guys are getting open shots. And so while in some games they might not go down, you also might catch the other side of the coin where they're going to hit the majority of those shots, and it's going to be very difficult for them to get beat. Again, the one thing that I would like to see them clean up, which could be the deciding factor between a win or loss, what I believe over the next 3 games are going to be their biggest test yet with the Knicks, the Nuggets, and the Bucks, is going to be ball control, ball security. They've averaged 17.5 turnovers per game over the last 4. They've given up 86 points off of turnovers. That's over 20 points per game off turnovers. That, to me, is not going to fly when you're playing better groups, especially teams that believe that they can contend for a championship. Maybe less so New York. They haven't shown to be a team that can, even at full strength, beat good squads. But Milwaukee with Giannis, the Warriors have not faced yet. They're an entirely different beast with him. And the Denver Nuggets are a team that's beaten the Warriors 7 times out of the last 7 meetings, going back to the 2022 postseason. So they're going to be very much tested. But again, the Butler effect is, it's on paper. And I think the eye test, it passes that too. You know, the one thing that I also believe that Jimmy has an ability to do a bit more of, which to me, Steve, is where we're going to see the Butler game, is I do think he can be an ISO scorer. Like, we've seen that a part of his past, but it's also been when he's had to be the one. Like you mentioned 2020. You know, that team had a rookie Tyler Hero. That team had a third-year player in Bam Adebayo. That team had, I think, a second-year player in Duncan Robinson, who was one of their leading scorers on that team. That was a very young Heat group in which he had to lead them. Even as recently as 2023, when they lost to the Nuggets in the finals, that was still a team of 25 and youngers, where Jimmy had to be the lead dog. He had to go out there and be an isolation scorer at times for them to win postseason games. I think there is going to come a time where we're thinking about the ways that the Warriors can win 4 games out of 7. How can you beat a team 4 times in 2 weeks? How can you get 16 wins over the course of 2 months, which is what you have to do to win a championship? There's absolutely going to be a game where Jimmy is going to take over. And it's not because he is someone that wants to do it. It's because he needs to. If he needs to score, and if that's the right play, I believe that he will do it. And one of the reasons is because he might have to take the pressure off of the guy we're going to hear from on the other side, and that is Steph Curry. Sat down for an awesome interview with Steiny and Guru. If you didn't have a chance to catch it, we're going to replay it for you coming up on the other side. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to talk to Sam Gordon, Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Very much tapped in. Looking forward to talking with him about everything that's going on with Butler, Curry, and, of course, the return of Jonathan Kuminga. And then at 11:30, Stephen Rizzotto holding it down for us behind the glass. He's got a game that we can all play together. But on the other side, Steph Curry, Steiny, Guru. Keep it locked right here on Warriors This Week. Evan Giddings flying solo today, and I appreciate for all of those of you who have chimed in for it. All right, we're back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings flying solo with you here today. Dan Devone's supposed to be back next week, 9 to noon, every single Saturday. Warriors This Week, current 95.7 The Game. We got Warriors-Knicks coming up at 5:30. Warriors live at 4:30. And Tim Roy, along with Tom Tolbert, have the call for you, the voice of Golden State Warriors basketball, for the 5:30 tip between the Warriors and the Knicks. Looking forward to that. A team that has had, I don't know, a bit of a special place in one Stephen Curry's career. Obviously, his 50-burger and kind of coming-out party in the 2013 season. Just put on a show in Madison Square Garden not too long ago where he was getting MVP chants and has basically just made Madison Square Garden somewhat of a second home for him. Steph Curry talked about a lot of these things, maybe not MSG, but he talked about his future. He talked about the future of this team, the potential that it has, and a lot more with Steiny and Guru earlier this week. And so right now, if we can, Steven, I want to replay that conversation for the people. We're also going to talk to Sam Gordon at 11 o'clock, beat writer for the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. But right now, let's listen to the chef who joined Steiny and Guru live from Chase Center in person. An awesome interview. Here it is in its entirety.
Number 30,
there he is.
Is entering the building, Steph Curry.
Yes, sir.
Steph, how you doing, man? Good to see you. What's going on? Thank you so much for joining us. And how's it going, man?
It's going great. Just finished a great professional practice.
What's happening?
Just discipline, detail, short and sweet. And we're trying to keep the vibes going. Wins are nice, but you still know we're still trying to get better, put things together. Welcome JK back tomorrow. Should be fun.
I mean, is it fair to say what we've all seen is real, that Jimmy getting here has energized you and Draymond and the whole team and has made you more of a believer that you could do something special this year?
That's what the trade signified when we did it, and you still have uncertainty whether it's going to work or not, but it puts everybody on edge. It gives you a sense of urgency to, figure out what it looks like on the court on both ends. And I think from the jump, obviously our record shows the new life that we have and how good Jimmy is and how good of a fit it is. But I think we're patient enough to know we have a long way to go. And so the building blocks from where we were pre-trade to where we are now, I like where we're at. I think we're all, like you said, energized and rejuvenated and optimistic that we can compete with anybody. But, you know, we have whatever, 18, 19 games left. We just want to solidify a playoff series. That's it.
Right.
The chef, Steph, just, I'm so happy for you and the fans and the team, because I remember you at the one of the post-game press conferences, and you're my barometer. I was like, man, he kind of despondent. We ain't built to come back. But walk us through where you were at when you got the news that Jimmy was coming to town and your thoughts.
That was a whirlwind of a day. We were about to play Utah, and rumors, talks, conversations, what ifs, and then it happens. So first you're upset because you're losing guys that you went to war with, you know, Wiggs especially, who helped us win a championship and saw him flourish for the whatever 5 years he was here. Dennis, Kyle, Lindy, seeing them guys go, who were a big part of early in the year. And then you think about the future. Yeah, we're excited that Jimmy was here. We were, you know, again, understanding of who he was as a superstar and the idea that he plays basketball a very similar way, trying to, as he would say, make the right play. But he demands a presence, and it's a guy that you have to worry about out there on the floor. And you can see it's helped me and Draymond, but I think overall it's helped everybody else more because he makes guys around him better, and he does it really naturally.
Well, when you first heard either his name brought up for the first time, there was some, you know, stuff out there that Warriors are maybe a little concerned with Butler's presence in the locker room, and you know, this is a team that's been together for a while, or at least its core. Did you have any of those, or that's just stuff from the outside that you don't pay attention to?
There's noise everywhere.
You told us you hear everything.
I hear everything. You try to filter through everything, too, to know what's real and what's not. I talked to Draymond. I talked to Mike Dunleavy, who was his vet in Chicago back in the day, and they spoke so highly of who Jimmy was. When the family feuds, it's obviously tough, and I know him and Miami have, you know, had a history of winning, and also didn't end the way that they wanted to, but when we talked to and understood Jimmy was going to be here, it was just about, you know, showing up, being a professional. He's motivated to win, and that's everything that I heard. And when you get locked in, Jimmy, it's the absolute best, and it's our job collectively to keep that energy going.
You guys just went on a road trip, and you were in Brooklyn, Steph, and the Brooklyn fans were chanting MVP. Just, I know you didn't heard it all, but just walk us through that. When you're in enemy territory, MVP, and they're talking about the visitor.
I like that because it means you're winning. You don't get the MVP chance if you're down 20 on the road. So it's just a big idea of, you know, Dub Nation travels. Like, we've had a really good presence in a lot of different, you know, arenas, and when you're winning and the vibes are good, like, you appreciate those environments, because that's the thing. Talking to any ex-pro who's played in this league, I don't care if you're a star or whatever, you miss that adrenaline rush, that not only the competition on the court, but, you know, the fan interaction and engagement, like, that all matters, and it means something. And so I definitely appreciate it.
I mean, we all see what kind of Jimmy's done on the court. Are you surprised he's been able to cure your bilateral tendonitis?
I was worried, Steph, early.
Nah, it's still there.
How are you feeling? My way of saying that.
I feel good. Like, I think the idea is I've learned my body this year more than I have, you know, had to in the previous years. And obviously, the ankle injuries early in my career, coming off the hand surgery, whatever, 5-6 years ago, into what this year was. So I've learned my body, learned what it needs to do to get right. Over the last 2 months, I've been able to kind of commit to that process. And it helps, obviously, to have another guy where the load isn't as demanding,
right,
physically and emotionally every single game. Doesn't mean that I'm not approaching it the same way, but it feels different. And like I said, when you're out there, the way that we've handled the minutes when I'm off the court and Jimmy's been able to run the show, and guys are most, Moses is playing great. BP, when he was healthy, was playing great. We still don't even have JK back. Like, when the vibe and everything on the court, it does help because you're not carrying that load. So, it's been an interesting year all the way around for sure.
Let me ask you this, because I know as much as you can share with us, 2022, you shocked the world. Nobody saw the Warriors winning it. You guys got off to that great start. This season starts, I'm like, I don't know, and then you make the trade. But, Steph, I told Stani and the listeners, I mean, you're as frisky as all outdoors. You got a pep in your step. Do you think about number five? Can you taste it? Do you feel something?
We talked about it. Somebody asked me this summer, like, what are you still playing for? That's literally the only thing you're playing for. And when you feel far away from it because you don't have a consistent, you're not rewarded consistently with wins on a nightly basis, or there's growing pains with a team, it does kind of, you know, knock at your confidence and your ability to imagine what it's like to be, you know, a relevant contender. And like I said, I like where we're at right now. I think we have what it takes to do it. But I'm not fast forwarding to saying, oh, we're a championship team right now, because we have another level to get to before we get to a playoff type environment. And I'm excited about that challenge. All I wanted to be is in the fight. All I wanted was a chance. All I wanted was an ability to look across the Western Conference and say, yeah, we can go toe-to-toe with whoever. And I feel like we're knocking on that door.
Steph Curry joining us, courtesy of the River Islands guest line on 95.7 The Game. Guru and Steiny here at Chase Center. Warriors just finished up practice. Where did Night Night come from? We all want to know.
Denver, game 3 in 2022. Me and Andre, there was one possession right before I made a layup down the stretch, like less than a minute left. He was up on the sideline. He was barking at everybody, and I was like, "No, I got this. I'm gonna put him to sleep right now." And I said that to him. It just mouthed it. I didn't do the sign or nothing. And I made the layup, and I did like a little quick, or the first quick night night, and then it kind of just evolved from there. So it's been a whirlwind, just seeing how many people have kind of attached to it in other sports, and you know, signifying like, "Yo, the job is done." So even seeing fans start to like encourage, like, "Oh, I need a night tonight." And it's like, well, we got 48 minutes to play first. Y'all too demanding.
Now I'm looking at you. You're in phenomenal shape, and your buddy LeBron James gets a lot of credit for his physique and his fitness at his age. But Steph, I feel like you get slighted. I'm looking at you. How long can you play? Because right now you just got a bounce in your step, man.
I don't know. I've tried to answer that question before, and I've said a lot of different things just based on how I feel that day. But I think, you know, it's all kind of measured on what the style of can I get to that level that I expect for myself. It's not really attached to like points per game or stats thing. It's just a feeling like, can I dominate a game? Can I play my style for 30 plus minutes? And then you kind of reevaluate every year. So I know how my contract's lined up, and I'd like to outplay that for sure. How long that goes, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I would like, you look at a guy like Tim Duncan, and he just kind of wound down into a real good role player. I think it's different for guards, and I'm like, that's one thing I've been curious about is if you look at what your role may become over the years, or you think to yourself, I'm going to be Steph Curry in 2 or 3 years, and I'm going to be the same guy. Or will you eventually make some kind of adjustment?
No, I think it's just a matter of having clarity to be able to answer that question and know, like, nobody wants to be naive to think, oh, I'm still that guy, and you're not, and you have a system built around you, and you have expectations built around, you know, that type of team. To that point, we're not there. What it looks like down the road, I'll figure that out. But I love the game, and I think the fact that I still show up and still have as much fun as I do every single night, that to me is the blessing and the beauty of where I'm at, about to turn 37. Just like I feel the exact same like a kid when I'm out there playing. It does take me a little longer to get there, you know, the pre-warm-up stuff and the recovery days and all that, but I still can get there.
Well, like, let me throw it to you this way. Like, down the line, could you ever see yourself coming off the bench?
I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think everything's on the table. To the question of defining, like, how long do I want to play? What is it going to take for me to do that? I'll answer those questions, but I'm open to anything. If it means I can win, nobody wants to just be around just existing. If it means I can win, I'd approach it anyway.
Talk to us about how proud you were, because I am of the Bay Area. You hosted some parties for the All-Star Game. And, Steph, I do got to ask you one personal question. Why no three-point contest?
I've been there, done that.
Yeah,
man.
We were trying
to get the me and Sabrina part two back, and it just didn't work out. I think we'll come back to that at some point. I know it's not in the Bay, but to have Draymond, Moses, and the Skills join, for me to show up at All-Star Game and get the MVP, it was a good ending to the weekend. I was super proud of the entire Bay Area, man, just because of the way that it showed up, representing the history of basketball culture here. Everybody who came said they had an amazing time. They saw the Bay in a different light, and I love the experience. So yeah, it was fun.
You guys really think you can win it?
Absolutely. That's why we're juiced to be in this position. I mean, how many teams think they can win it right now? Probably, what, 8 to 10?
I'd say 8. Maybe how many 8-ish? Have won it 4 times?
You know what I'm saying? There's 8 to 10 teams every year, 6 to 8, 10 teams every year that think that they can win it. You want to be in that category. Does it mean it's going to happen? You know, we'll see. But I like the idea that we can confidently say on a night to night, we can figure out how to beat anybody.
Let me ask you this. Like, why if you were to win it all, what would be the reason you'd win it all? And then what would be the reason that would get you beat?
There are some really good teams out there. You could look at Boston, Cleveland, OKC, Denver, the records teams that have, 3 of those teams who have won it before. So you think about, experience, but for us, we have that experience on our side. We have a good balance of veteran presence, youthful energy. I think the fact that since the trade, our roles have been clearly defined. Our rotation's pretty consistent from a night-to-night perspective. It might get a little tighter as you get closer to playoffs, but you know, having your 9-10 guys that you know are going to play, you know, the bulk of the minutes, who's going to be out there on the floor, that clarity has given us a lot of confidence. But at the end of the day, you know, me, Draymond, Jimmy, we've all been around. We know what it's like to be in a playoff series, to have to figure out that specific opponent and how to beat him 4 times. And like I said, if you get us in that scenario, we like our chances. So
I shouldn't take the field this year?
Was this the same room we were in? No, we were maybe in a different room when I
Well, I took the field, that was the Lakers year. You won it the year before.
Man. We didn't do that? That wasn't the same year?
Yeah.
I messed up.
They was coming off a change.
I got you.
Steph,
I'll let you put the odds out there. We'll do our stuff.
They just got
the
a lot better, I'll tell you that. Man, I am so excited about the rest of this season in the playoffs, but to appreciate the good, I'm one of them. You got to remember the bad. But Steph, how much did you pay attention to last year when you guys didn't make it, lost to the Kings? Like, how much did that fuel you to where you're at now? Because I ain't gotten over it.
Well, personally, I had plenty of time to sit on my couch, watch the playoffs, get ready for the Olympics.
So you do watch?
Oh, yeah, I watch. I watch a lot. But I was getting ready for the Olympics last summer and was motivated to get back into high-stakes basketball. And then, obviously, that played out great. This year, we got off to a great start and then, you know, hit a lot of challenges. And at the end of the day, like, you just appreciate, because of being 16 years in the league and how many times we've done this and being with one franchise and trying to recreate this, with another iteration of this team, like, all of that stuff just brings out the best in you. And so, you think about that, you got to appreciate the down. Like, even before 22, we were so far away from the mountaintop and figured out a way to climb back to it. And, for us to even just have a consideration like, oh, we're in 6, like, we jumped 5 spots in 3 weeks up the conference standings, like, that, who would have thought that 3 weeks ago? So I like where we're at. We just got to stay present, man. Everybody's going to, as they should, compare us to what it looks like to hang another banner. But we know what it takes to take our time and take the baby steps to get there.
Is it, like, physically, I mean, you're going to be 37. Jimmy's up there. Draymond's up there. There's never been a team with 3 core players of your age. The Bulls with Jordan and Rodman had Ron Harper, but Scotty was a little younger. I mean, do you think about where you're at in your career and how unbelievable this would be?
Man. I think about it all the time. I even think about how unbelievable it's been to be where we are right now. So you just kind of recreate that that confidence and that internal belief. Like, even the fact that I'm, most people didn't think I'd still be playing at this level at the age that I'm at. So we defy odds consistently. So why not do it again?
So we heard you got a new job, assistant GM at Davidson. Talk to us, Steph.
It's a pretty cool opportunity with myself, Aisha, the Berman family, alumni from Davidson. This 8-figure pledge that we've committed to both the men's and women's basketball teams. I know it's a very competitive landscape in college basketball right now, but the experience that I had at Davidson and the ability to commit to a program and be there 4 years and understand what it's like to represent the Wildcat program, for me, I wanted to make sure we had that a competitive advantage and be a resource. So I'm excited about the opportunity. We just got a big win in the A-10 today. Saturday against Richmond.
Nice.
Shout out to Kenny Atkinson. But yeah, it's about just supporting, you know, my alma mater, who I want to recreate that experience that I had, that I've benefited from, the teammates that I got to play for. Coach McKillop, he's established an unbelievable, Coach Bob McKillop has established an unbelievable program. Matt McKillop now the head coach. So we're in it for the long run.
All right. Well, we just wanted to say how.
And that was Steiny and Guru live at Chase Center with none other than number 30, Stephen Curry, who, of course, just turned 37 a couple days after, on Friday, right after he broke the 4,000 career three-point threshold, which, by the way, I've said this a couple times. Like, Steve, where do you fall on how impressive that feat is? Like, I'm not going to lie. I didn't think it was a massive deal, because if we're being realistic, every time he makes a three, it's history. Like, he broke the record in 2022. And also, by the way, I think threes in the postseason are pretty important. Another career mark he also owns. So, like, don't get me wrong. The applause was awesome. I love how much Chase Center was into it. Curry said he got emotional seeing Andres Biedrins send him the message about his first career assist for Curry's three. Or his first career three from the Biedrins assist. But, like, I don't know. Of all the storylines going on with the Warriors, and especially that night with Kuminga's return, like, I guess I didn't really see it. Did you?
No. and the reason is because I think you just mentioned it perfectly. The record in regards to three-point shooting that he needed to break, he broke. The Ray Allen record was it. And we as a society are just so caught up in round numbers. And I do think it's cool. I do think that it is cool to be a round number, and he's in a club by himself. Is there a possibility somebody gets to that club? Maybe, maybe not. You know, I love that it promotes conversation within our station, basketball, sports. It's fun. But at the same time, I agree, he's making history with every additional three he makes. 4,000 to me, just it's the same thing as 4,001. I know that sounds like a get off my lawn type thing, but I mean, Barry Bonds hit, you know, he broke the record, and then he hit six more home runs that nobody even thinks about, you know. So in every sport, I think, you know, once you break the record, I think somebody joining the 4,000 club additionally down the road would be a bigger deal than Steph creating the 4,000 club. And I think maybe that's unfair.
No, I mean, I kind of felt the same way about LeBron scoring 50,000 points. Like, I didn't care. it didn't hit me the way I guess people are promoting it across all these other NBA platforms. Like, oh my God, it's unreal, and this guy is the greatest, or I don't know, whatever you want to say. Like, 50K meant nothing to me. He already had the points record. Now, what I think is going to be important for both of those two guys, but applying it primarily to Steph, whatever the final number is, that is something that I think we should celebrate, because in my opinion, it's never going to be touched. Whatever that number ends up being, because I'm assuming he's going to play, and you heard during Steiny Guru's interview with him, he wants to outplay his current contract, which I believe right now is through the 2027 season, two more years lined up, because he's aligned with Butler, along with Draymond. If he keeps shooting it, and I don't even know if it's at this clip, but like, let's say he takes a slight dip, he's going to have a chance to get to 5,000 threes if he stays healthy for a few more seasons. And whatever number, I don't care if it's, you know, 5,000 or 4,832, that number to me is going to be untouchable. And I went through a little bit of the math, and I know we got Sam Gordon coming up in 5 minutes here on Warriors this week. But real quick, you look at the guy that I think probably is the best chance to break it, because I was talking about this with someone yesterday, and someone said, well, Trae Young's got a shot. And I said, no, he doesn't. Like, no, he does not. Trae Young currently makes close to three threes per game, and he shoots around 35%. And I think he averages 9 attempts per game. What he would need to do at age 26 until he's age 36, just to be in the conversation, to be in the realm of wherever Curry's going to leave this three-point career mark, is he would have to raise his three-point attempts to about 13 or 14 per game. He would then have to raise his three-point percentage from 35 to at least 40%. And he would have to raise his total three-point makes per game from about three, where it is right now for his career, to 4.5. That, to me, and that's just to be in the conversation, not even to break a record or get close. Like, that's how difficult it is for someone who is currently in the NBA. Where I think that people believe that one day it's going to be broken is because of how important the three-point shot is. That, to me, is a basketball-wide thing. It's not an individual thing. Some individual is not going to come along and break that three-point record, but the league will continue to shoot more threes. It's all about the volume from the team, not the volume from an individual. That's where I think it's going to eventually be ultimately impressive at its peak, is whatever that final number ends up being. The 4,000 in itself didn't really mean that much to me. All right, we can talk about this along with a multitude of other things. Jonathan Kuminga's return, the Warriors' hot stretch as they get set for the New York Knicks tonight at 5:30 with the Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, Sam Gordon, coming up on the other side of Warriors This Week. Evan Giddings flying solo with you on 95.7 The Game. We're back after this.